I'm Mark Feinsand, executive reporter for MLB.com. I had a chance recently to catch up with Matt Klentak, the Phillies' vice president and general manager, at Spectrum Field in Clearwater, Florida. We talked about a variety of topics, including his unique relationship with Mets general manager Sandy Alderson, why he thinks Howie Kendrick and Clay Buchholz were perfect fits for Philadelphia, and much, much more. Enjoy.
So how did you land your first job in baseball?
When I graduated from college, I set out to learn as much as I could about the game and connect with as many people as I could, and that ended up leading to some conversations with the Red Sox about an internship there right after Theo had become GM. And that did not materialize, but the Red Sox guys were very helpful in putting me in touch with Thad Levine and some of the guys that worked at the Rockies at the time. And one thing led to another, and I ended up with an internship at the Rockies and for the 2003 season. That was my first job.
You played 4 years at Dartmouth. Played with Brent Alderson.
Yeah.
Sandy Alderson's son.
Yeah.
Did you have a chance to meet Sandy when you were in college and pick his brain about the industry?
I did. And in fact, Brent is a year behind me. And I hosted Brent on his recruiting trip, so I actually got to meet Brent and Sandy even before Brent ever enrolled. But yeah, I did. And Sandy was, at that time, he was working in the league office and I guess had a bit more flexibility in the springtime. So he was a regular at our games. So we would see him a lot. And I didn't really get to know him that well. But then I think when I was I can't remember if I was a junior or a senior, but I sought him out and set up a breakfast on one of our road trips so I could just pick his brain about the industry. At that point in my career, I was sort of resigned to the fact that I was not going to play anymore beyond college, so started looking for what the next steps might be. And Sandy's been very helpful to me in my career. He's been a good resource.
You probably didn't expect back then that you guys would be division rival GMs at some point?
No.
You have a degree in economics. How does that help you in your current role?
Yeah. I mean, look, we obviously have, there's a lot of money in this sport, and every team, no matter your market size, carrying a big payroll. So, understanding how to invest. In this case, it's in players and how to construct a team. There's a lot of critical thinking skills that come from a degree in economics. And, I can't say I apply a lot of the fine details to my everyday work, but a lot of the larger points are ones that we implement every day.
You once said the best piece of advice you ever got was don't leave a conversation without getting the name of at least one other person to talk to. How valuable was that early in your career?
It was a very valuable piece of advice when I received it, and I took it seriously. I will tell you, having been on the other end of it now, where some people have read that and then asked me that, it's put me in a tough spot sometimes where I have to recommend someone for them to speak to that may not want to. But I think it's a great piece of advice, and it makes all the sense in the world when someone is young and just trying to get their foot in the door in an industry. It's not necessarily about finding the job right away, though that may be the long-term goal. It's about learning, and that's really what it is all about. Because there is no, you can't go to a four-year college and major in baseball operations. That's not a thing. That doesn't exist. So, we have to. Any of us trying to get into this industry have to, go through the process and put in the time after college to get to know the industry, to get to know people, to make connections, and to really prepare ourselves for a career in this field.
A lot of the people you connected with early in your career, you mentioned Thad Levine before, are now fellow GMs. Does this feel like a fraternity of sorts at times, or maybe like being in the minor leagues and all coming up together?
I've never exactly thought about it in those terms, but I will tell you, relationships are very important to making a trade or just a general dialogue throughout the year and staying in touch. So the more history that you have with an opposing GM or an agent or a scout or whoever, the more trust you have going into it just makes those conversations that much easier. And we see it in baseball all the time that it seems like two teams are frequently paired together in trades. And why does that happen? Usually that's because the GMs just have a very open relationship and will throw ideas at each other, and sometimes deals come together quickly. So there are a bunch that in the industry now that I've worked with at various times, you know, whether it was in my internship year or something more recent, and that's good, just from a relationship building perspective.
After your stint with the Rockies, you worked at MLB's labor relations department for 4 years. You worked on the CBA in 2006. What did you learn from that entire experience with MLB?
Oh, a lot. That was, again, I've said this too. I think as a young person in this industry, trying to just learn the way the teams operate, learn the way that the league office operates, that's about the LRD position's about as good a job as you can have in this industry to get to know, just to get to know people and get to know the way things work. And you know what was, you know, we obviously in that role didn't get into quite the level of detail in terms of constructing a roster as anybody at a team would naturally. But you know, in a lot of ways, we were able to assess the way that 30 different teams, the approach that 30 teams took to the same problem and or same issue. And you know, you kind of adopt certain best practices from that, just learning the way different teams do things. Now, the industry's evolved a lot since the time that I worked there, but as just a platform for me, and really there's a lot of us that in the industry that started there as a platform for a career in baseball operations, I'm not sure there's anything better.
Was there a part of you that thought maybe you'd have a lifelong career in the commissioner's office, or did you always want to go work for a club?
I'm pretty competitive by nature and love the game, so I would have been happy to stay there, you know, as long as it was, you know, as long as I was challenged, and which I was, and as long as I enjoyed the work, which I did. But I, you know, when the right opportunity came up at a club, I was eager to jump to that. But it was a great experience, and I worked with a lot of really impressive people there, and got to know a lot. They treated me very well. I look back really fondly on those 4 years.
And one of them's the commissioner now.
Yeah, exactly. Always good to know the commissioner.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That next stop is Baltimore. You're the Orioles director of baseball operations under Andy McPhail. Even though the Orioles lost 90-plus games in each season you were there, you did help build a team that went on to get back to the postseason the year after you left. Was there any sense of satisfaction watching that 2012 Orioles team succeed?
Yes. Though I will tell you, by that point I was with the Angels, and we were the first team out of the playoffs last that year, and the Orioles were the first one in. So, it's competitively no, but you know, sort of with the ability to sort of look back on it and appreciate it, absolutely. And what Dan, you know, did after we left there, you know, and sort of getting that team over the hump, and the way that Buck has been able to manage the 25 men there to put them in a position to win is, you know, they deserve a ton of credit. But yeah, I've enjoyed everywhere I've worked, but those 4 years in Baltimore were special for me. That was the first, you know, full-time job I had on the club side. Obviously working for Andy was awesome, and is awesome today as well. But to really go through a rebuild the right way, and to commit to it, to understand, to turn the page from whatever had been done in the past, to establish a new culture. I mean, there were a lot of really valuable lessons learned in those 4 years, and you know, the only shame of it for me on a personal level is that I left before a lot of good things happened at the major league level, so I didn't get a chance to watch that every day. But I'm really happy for all those guys.
You joined the Angels as the assistant GM after the 2011 season. You had a close-up view of Mike Trout every day. What was it like watching him on a daily basis?
Yeah, I mean, he was phenomenal. He was, you know, I think the thing that I liked, that I think we all as baseball fans can and should appreciate, is just obviously he's a good player, but there's just his work ethic and the type of person he is, and what a good ambassador he is for the game. So we were very fortunate through all the years I was with the Angels. We had good players. We inherited good players when we got there. We traded for a few. We signed some to big free agent contracts, and you know, we had talent there all 4 years we were there, and it was a different experience than what I went through in Baltimore, where we were rebuilding, and where with the Angels we were already a good team and we were trying to sustain that. How do we kind of retool on the fly? It was a little bit different, but again, really, really valuable experience, surrounded by great people, Jerry DePoto, Scott Servais, and many others. So it was, and plus living by the beach wasn't so bad either.
Was there a sense of disappointment when you didn't get the Angels GM job after Jerry resigned?
You know, not really. For that summer, Jerry left at the beginning of July. So for the, you know, for the rest of that summer, you know, Bill Stoneman kind of stepped into the GM office. But to Bill's credit, who'd been out of that office for some time, he led us as, you know, the baseball group, Scott and myself and Justin and Hal and all the guys that were there at the time. He kind of let us run the day to day. So, you know, I really enjoyed that summer. I was, you know, not happy that Jerry was gone, obviously, but I enjoyed the summer, and in retrospect, I think just even those few months of you know, being more of the point man for some of our conversations with other clubs or with agents, or even with Mike and the major league staff, I think, you know, while I didn't necessarily realize it at the time, it was very helpful to me when I ultimately did come to Philadelphia to sit in the GM chair, because some of the things I had to do were not totally foreign.
3 weeks after Billy Epler was hired in Anaheim, you got the Phillies GM job, yeah. Reunited with Andy. What were those weeks leading up to your hiring like? Was there anxiety? Was there...
Yeah, I mean, you know, you asked earlier about, you know, what it's like to have worked with worked with people before they become GMs, and so I'd known Billy's one of the first people I knew with the Rockies, so I'd known Billy going back, whatever that was, 12, 13 years at that point, so there was an immediate trust and comfort level between the two of us. He was awesome, you know, right when he assumed the job, that right around that time was when I was first contacted to come interview with Philadelphia, and he could not have been more supportive. He obviously had just gone through it himself, so I mean he knew what that entailed and the work that it entailed for me to prepare for that, and that my mind would be in kind of two places at once. And he was as supportive and helpful as possible, and made it clear that, you know, we're rooting for you to get the job, and if you don't get it, you know, we'll be happy to have you here. And so I felt like at that point I was in a win-win situation. We loved living in California. I knew Billy. I loved working for the Angels, and also, you know, was seeking a job with the Phillies that I was really intrigued by too, to go work with Andy, who I've already worked with. So I, you know, really either way, I felt like it was going to be a win for me. I'm obviously happy the way it shook out, but Billy was great.
When you were hired, Andy said, "We have to have someone who's willing to disagree. We can't all think like lemmings and walk off the same cliff." How often do those disagreements take place?
Yeah, I definitely disagree with Andy. And I think at the time he said that, I think he was referring as much as anything to our time in Baltimore, where he was the experienced GM, and I was this, you know, hotshot kid who thought he knew everything, who would disagree with him with some frequency. But now in his role is a little bit different. He oversees the whole club, not just baseball, so he's not quite as in touch with the details of baseball operations as he was when he was with the Orioles. But I to be fair, I completely agree with him. Anytime you're whether you're a GM or a president or a major league manager, any type of leadership position, it's important to surround yourself with people that that will challenge you and will think differently and will throw ideas at you that maybe you hadn't thought of before. And that doesn't mean you have to do them ever. You know, you can say no once, you can say no every time, but I think we always have to be cognizant of challenging ourselves and making sure that we're exploring new ideas. And so I think that's what he meant when he said that. But I mean, he hired me, so you know, he couldn't have been too turned off by it.
How do you feel about the overall state of your minor league system right now?
Very, very, very good. You know, I said earlier in the off season that if someone had, when I got this job, if someone had fast forwarded a year and told me this is where the system would be, I would sign up for that 100 times out of 100, and that's true. I mean, really, we had a lot of players reach the big leagues for the first time last year, and some of our young players at the big league level took steps forward. And the minor leagues, you know, we had way more positives than negatives as a group, and you know, I think we had a good draft and brought in some good kids internationally. So I'm really pleased. I think, you know, as much as anything, I think we have a lot of depth in our system, and I think for where this franchise was 3 or 4 years ago, some of the trades that Ruben made and the way that Johnny drafted, and you know, some of the things we've been able to do since I've gotten here, I think we've added more a depth of quality baseball players to our organization, and that should only help us as we move forward.
There are some that believe sabermetrics are more important than scouting. There are some believe vice versa. Do you think the importance of analytics in general have caught up at least to the importance of scouting over the past 10, 15 years?
You know, the biggest thing for me is I think there has to be a balance, and obviously some teams may gravitate more towards one or the other, but it's not really an either or conversation. It's about all the information that we can get our hands on. Those are two of the primary ones, but there's more than that. And how do we best put that information together to make good decisions? And I think anybody who's just dismissing out of hand some piece of the puzzle is just making a mistake. So that's been our message to our group for the last year and a half: is let's try to collect all the information we can. We'll put it into the we'll put it into the machine. We'll make decisions out of it, and hopefully we'll make more good decisions than bad ones.
Now that all 30 teams have analytics departments, what do you think is going to be the next new wave as teams look to gain a competitive advantage?
Yeah, I mean, simply, and this might be a boring answer, I think it's which teams are best able to process the information that they do have and best able to gain advantages in different areas, and just how do we refine our approach to things to, it's not... Again, it's probably if you can make one better decision out of 100 as a result of better information, that's worth it. So and that's way it's more than worth it. But I think that to me that's the big thing is just how do we continue to adjust to new pieces of information and new approaches and synthesize it, put it all together to make good decisions.
MLB StatCast has made some of these metrics more public to the fans over the past couple of years. Do you think that's changed the way people look at the game?
I think over time it will. I think baseball fans as a group are pretty sophisticated, and that's been the case for a long time. I think fans want to know about what's going on in the field. They want to be educated. They want to know about the players, and they want to know why teams are making certain decisions. So. I think now that some of StatCast, for example, is becoming more public, curiosity, people are going to be curious about it and are going to ask questions, and stadiums are going to start showing, who knows, distances and launch angles and exit velocities and spin rates up on scoreboards and or on the telecast, and fans are going to learn about it. I think that's all really good. I think that the more transparent we can be as an industry with our fans, the better connected we're going to be.
Trust the process has become a very trendy phrase in Philadelphia sports in recent years. As a GM, how important is it to develop a plan and have the discipline to stick with it regardless of the bumps along the way?
I think it is critical. I think, and if you look at baseball over the last 10 years or so, the organizations that have really devoted themselves to a plan, whatever that plan has been, have been rewarded as long as they've stuck with it. Those that have changed course halfway through, for those organizations sometimes it takes a little bit longer because you have to start over in some ways. So I think as important as anything is that we have our plan and we stick with it, and I have been very pleased and encouraged in my year and a half with the Phillies that from our ownership group to our president to our baseball operations group to Pete McCannon and his staff, everybody is on board with that, and that to me is a sign of a healthy organization when there's continuity in the direction we're trying to head, and that's the main reason why I'm so bullish on our future.
Is balancing the present and the future the toughest part of this job?
I don't know if it's the toughest, but it's certainly among the most important. I think that's true. Whether you're a win now club or you're a building club, you always have to keep one eye on the present and one eye on the future. That's just the reality of the our sport, and it's something we put a lot of focus on that, and we're pretty open about it too. I mean, I try to. When we communicate with our fans, and we try to be very, very honest about our intentions, and it's very, 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 very important.
you have a history with Howie Kendrick from your days in Anaheim. How much does that help you when you're considering bringing in a free agent when you have a history with him?
Yeah, it's helpful for sure. And I think if you look at, you know, when GMs or leadership positions turn over, they usually, especially in the early year or two, there's more players, you know, from a former team that are brought in than otherwise. But you know, in Howie's case, I think, you know, we were looking for a couple of things. We were looking for a professional hitter to hit in the middle of our lineup and help improve our offense. But we're also looking for someone who could serve as a mentor for our young players. And you know, whether that's vocally or just in terms of their work habits, you know, I think Howie can do that. Howie's among the hardest working players I've ever been around. He is dedicated to his craft at the plate. He's one of the most disciplined hitters. You can see him just always trying to stay inside the ball. And I think with so many young players on the Phillies, you know, just having somebody in the lineup that has had the success that Howie's had and does it the way he does it, we feel like that creates a nice blend for our roster, while at the same time, and as importantly, helps us to win more games.
Clay Buchholz is once considered one of the top pitching prospects in baseball. His time in Boston was a bit of a roller coaster. You think a change of scenery could help him?
That's the hope. I mean, I think we scouted Clay, you know, quite a bit last summer, and, you know, kind of knowing that he had the looming option decision and not knowing which way it would go. So we got a pretty good look at him, and I think the guys in Boston, you know, the Brian Bannister and their pitching group and Clay himself and making some adjustments. I think he really did. We hope that he turned a corner last summer. We think some of the changes he made, you know, should be sustainable. So you know, we're excited. He's reunited with Bob McClure, who was our pitching coach and was his pitching coach for a year in Boston a few years back. And you know, so far his work habits, his sort of understanding of what he's trying to do has all been very good. So we're hopeful he's going to have an impact season for us.
Michael Franco broke onto the scene in 2015, followed up with another productive year in 2016. He's only 24 years old.
Yeah.
How much better do you think he can still get?
Well, again, if you look at aging curves, I think we should fairly easily reach a conclusion that Franco's not the best version that he's going to be. You know, hopefully there's still more in the tank. Just how much remains to be seen. Obviously, he's talented, and we see that, you know, fairly regularly when he hits a ball 450 feet or makes a sprawling play defensively. I mean, he's got a strong arm over there. He can do a lot of things, and that's what's intriguing. That's what's exciting. But just like with every young player, you know, he needs to learn to be, you know, consistent with it and be disciplined. And, you know, with the new hitting coach in Matt Stairs, with some of the veterans around him, and just with Mikel's work habits and just maturation as he becomes a more experienced player, you know, I think there's a lot of hope here that he's going to take a step forward this year.
What did you like about Stairs as a hitting coach, and do you think it helps that he's played with or against a lot of these guys, or certainly a lot of the pitchers that they're going to be facing?
You know, I think for any hitting coach, I mean, one of the biggest keys is just communication. You know, they have to be able to talk to hitters about hitting, you know, in many different ways, because certain things will resonate with some players and other things will resonate with other players. So I think in Matt's case, an ability to communicate is key. I like that Matt loves hitting. I don't know if I've ever met somebody who is as passionate about the art of hitting as Matt Stairs is, and he's positive. You know, when something good happens, there's nobody happier than Matt Stairs. I think those are really good characteristics. Obviously, it helps that he knows our team. You know, he's been, albeit in the broadcast booth, not in the field, he's been watching and getting to know our players quite a bit over the last few years. And, you know, I think all those things in combination hopefully bode well for his future as a hitting coach.
Doesn't a hitting coach almost have to love hitting? I mean, the amount of time they spend in a cage
yeah.
and the amount of work that goes into prepping yeah. for, you know, for a series.
I think that's right, but I would still challenge you to find someone who likes hitting more than Matt Stairs.
The free agent class after the 2018 season is shaping up to be one of the most loaded we've seen maybe ever.
Yeah.
How far ahead do you look at things like that when you're looking at making decisions in the 2016 and 2017 off seasons leading up to that 2 years from now?
That really gets back to the question about balancing the present and the future. I mean, so we're keenly aware of what's coming. But we also, you know, have to temper that somewhat because, you know, some of the players that we're projecting, you know, 2 years from now to be elite free agents are you know, they're going to sign extensions with their teams, or some will regress or get hurt. So it, like, what we see today is not necessarily what's going to happen, what it's going to be out there when the players hit free agency. But, you know, I think, as I said earlier, I think one of the areas where we're very fortunate is that, you know, our ownership is aligned very closely in its thinking with our management group, and right now Odubel Herrera is the only player in our organization signed beyond 2017, and that we hope is going to be a good contract. So you know, this franchise has a recent history of running high payrolls. You know, when the team's ready to win, that this ownership group has demonstrated time and time again that they will make the investment. So I have no doubt that, you know, that will continue into the future. That our job as management is to try to, you know, make sure when we do make those investments that the time is right, that the core of the ball club in terms of the young talent is in place to allow those free agents or trades or whatever, those more expensive acquisitions, you know, allow us to get over the hump. And you know, we have to establish that core first.
For the folks up north who haven't been able to get down to Florida and have been enduring snow for the past couple days anyway, who's stood out to you in camp? Who's jumped out, caught your attention?
Honestly, we've had a pretty good camp so far, both in terms of energy level, but health and performance. Look, I think our team this year is going to be a blend of young players that we're continuing to grow and get better, and also, you know, sprinkled in some of the veterans that we acquired this offseason. We talked about Kendrick, but Saunders and Benoit and Nishek and Hellickson and Buchholz and players like that. And just what I've been pleased is to watch that group come together and gel, and watch the young kids, you know, take advice from a veteran and just watch as the team develops. That's all been fun to watch. And you know, the other thing I'll say, it's important, I think, to give our player development group a lot of credit, because every one of the players that we brought up this year to Major League Camp for the first time, even kids who've never played outside of A-ball, every one of them has really worn the uniform well, handled themselves with class and maturity, and really performed pretty well on the field. So I think that's a sign that our player development group's doing a good job of not only getting our players ready on the field, but getting them ready off the field for, you know, the pressures of playing in front of, you know, bigger crowds and major league teams.
A few weeks away from opening day, right now, what would you say is your team's biggest strength and your biggest question mark?
Yeah, I mean, let's start going reverse order. I mean, in terms of question marks, I mean, we're a young team, and with a young team, there's going to be more volatility in performance when you don't have quite the track record. So, you know, I guess just an uncertainty about how quickly someone like Franco, who you asked about, how quickly someone like that might, move to the next level. Right? We saw with the Cubs a few years back that, you know, a lot of their young players all took steps forward the same year and became, you know, elite level players, and that has a way of fast tracking a rebuild. So we'll see. You know, we'll see how. There's some uncertainty to that, but we'll see how that plays out. In terms of a strength, we have a lot of starting pitching depth right now, not only on the big league roster, but also in AAA and in AA, and hopefully coming behind that as well. So that's, you know, by design. I mean, we know the realities of starting pitching and the injury risks that come with it. So, you know, our approach to that is to try to gather as much starting pitching as we can to make sure we have the appropriate depth to withstand, you know, a season, but really, you know, many seasons ahead.
How do you assess the state of the National League East?
I think we had the two teams that were in the playoffs last year, you know, made themselves better and are still going to be good teams. And I think the other three, including us, have taken steps to improve as well. So I think the division as a whole probably became more competitive, and, you know, and that's good. I mean, you know, to become the best, you have to beat the best, and, you know, we'll be challenged this year for sure.
Matt, good luck this season. Thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot.